Welcome to the Crypto Camper.
They just want to live in a world where a chicken can cross the road without its motivations being questioned. Mitch and the Professor, featuring special guest Kenny Schachter.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto Campfire Podcast. This is the Professor.
And Mitch.
And today we're going to be talking with Kenny Schachter. Well, Mitch, you know, it sounds to me like you've got a little bit of warm weather over here that you need to send this way. I'm getting a little tired of the snow in May.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, it's nice because it's kind of fitting. We've gone into this little miniature crypto winter and it's starting to melt off again and things are starting to build back up. And it's been interesting watching NFTs kind of experience sort of the same cycles that we've seen cryptocurrencies go through so many times. It's definitely been fun to watch. But I'm kind of curious to get the perspective on it from Kenny's standpoint. So before we get into that, though, Kenny, welcome to the show. First off, most important question of the day. If you could replace the tires, or if you had to, because if you could, you wouldn't do this. But if you had to replace the tires on all of your vehicles with any one substance or material, what would it be and why?
If I had to replace the tires on my vehicle. Gummy bear.
Gummy bears? I love it.
Traction.
Gummy bears would be a problem. If it were my cars, because I would have no tires left by the end of the day. I have a problem. With gummies, I have a fascination with gummies that's unacceptable.
Every rest area, you'd be chewing on a tire. That's hilarious.
You have to change your rims to some sort of like hard candy that would last for a while. You're like an everlasting gobstopper.
Could you imagine the looks you'd get on the side of the road? You're down there gnawing on your tire. People are driving, going, what is this guy doing? I'm blowing my tire up. Whatever.
You have a soft ride.
Exactly. It'd be smooth while it lasted.
Hell, you could climb walls.
Yeah. You know, and it'd be really temperamental with temperature too. Like in the cold, you know, it'd get real hard and fragile. And in the summer, they'd just be gone. It'd be soup.
Right. That's crazy. I love it. Good answer, Kenny.
I love it. All right. So let's go back in time a little bit. I'm kind of curious when you actually discovered the NFT space, first of all, and then were you already in crypto at the time, or was that sort of all new to you at the same time?
I have been making digital art for 30 years. I was obviously cognizant, aware of crypto, but it never interested me, primarily because I'm a very narrow focused human being. I like art, and that's it. I'm crazy, passionate, in love with art. Uh-huh. Then come my kids, neck and neck. And I like classic cars, speaking of gummy bears, and I wasn't exactly prepared for that question. And I was thinking
nobody
about,
is. Nobody could possibly about
compliance with the tires on the road and suspension and how that would feel, because I've had some old sports cars where your teeth jutter because the suspensions are so tight. But I think the most interesting part about I've never bought crypto in my entire life. I got involved, I'll explain, but then somebody shot me an ETH when it was around 1600. And from there, I used it as a jumping off point to start minting in OpenSea. And I'm now on 5 platforms, Nifty Gateway. I had my third release recently. And Super Rare, Rarible, Foundation, OpenSea, all 5. Anyway, I found out about NFTs in September 2020. Excuse me. Which I'm choking on my enthusiasm, which makes me...
That's perfect, though.
Which makes me a veteran in this space, relatively speaking. But I think the most salient point that I can express to anybody and all these crazy critics and deniers and cynics is that I heard about NFTs in September and I turned my head sideways like a confused dog and didn't understand the foggiest notion of what it really art that was ethereal, no pun intended, that you couldn't put your hands on, you couldn't hang on the wall necessarily. But as a maker of digital videos, that's what I do. So it immediately gripped me in the sense that I make content that exists as digitally manipulated photographic work, JPEGs, and digital film. So it was a no-brainer that this would be an applicable way, a new system for me to disseminate my work into the stream of commerce, plain and simple. The most important fact being that it never occurred to me, because this was pre-Beeple and all the money bullshit, it never for once, I never thought to myself, this is going to be a windfall, I'm going to make a shit ton of money from this. It just simply occurred to me that this was a logical system, a delivery system within for me to distribute my art and find an audience, a new audience, besides the kind of very myopic, small-minded, traditional art world. So at that time, there wasn't, you know, everyone and their grandmother trying to get on Nifty and Super Rare and all these sites, platforms. So my friend who told me about these things, artist Olive Allen, she put me in touch with Tommy Kimmelman at Nifty. And I sold three pieces. I made $4,000 and I was extraordinarily grateful, number one. Number two, it was an entirely new audience of people being exposed to my work. And number three, it hit me like a ton of bricks that this was going to have profound, lasting impact on the art world. No matter what you call it, the old art world, this conservative art world, traditional art world, whatever it was, it just instantaneously dawned on me that this was new and this could have radical repercussions. And then I wrote on Instagram like my 20 forecast for the year 2021, or and then I published in the art newspaper that if you didn't know what NFTs were, you're either too old, but you were bound to hear about it soon. And again, this was all before the money situation. So when I had my second, you asked me a question, it'll go on for 45 minutes, sorry. But
that's
I had
a good
my,
thing, though.
I had my second already. So I decided that this was something I was going to invest the time, energy to learn everything I could and read everything I could. And then I wrote my first of five feature articles on NFTs for ArtNet February 22nd. And I had my second release at Nifty Gateway, which I had to hustle to get. At that point, it was a deluge and everyone wanted to do it. And at that point, I sold more art by a factor of 10 than I had ever sold in 30 years of making art. And it's been a bumpy ride. I had another release last week and I made 90% less money, but that's still money that I wouldn't have had in any other circumstance. So I remain wildly enthusiastic, wildly grateful and appreciative that this exists. And I just love the fact that I pissed off so many people. It's such a provocative thing. Because I teach at universities all over the world and I've been like, I fought my way tooth and nail into the art world, traditional art world, but I've always been kind of provocative and pissing people off. And I killed two birds with one stone being the kind of cheerleader for NFTs. And now I'm even making, I mean, I just had someone threaten to beat me up last week. A critic. So I love it. It has all the hallmarks of the things that I care about. It's
perfect.
About
awesome.
It's about disseminating art to the widest audience, a new audience, and it's very exciting. And I have the same level of enthusiasm as I did back in September.
That's so cool. It's so different to be able to put your work out to a totally new and unique audience. And you know, just that exposure alone is priceless, really, if you think about it. In the traditional sense, trying to get your artwork in front of a lot of people, you'd had to set up a gallery, you know, you have to have an open house, you have to have people come and see your work.
Kiss some ass.
Yeah, right. A lot of ass kissing. I mean, a shit ton, right? And so there's all those things that played into getting your exposure and getting your work out there. And now it's just that much easier to reach more people. I mean, globally, that's the beauty of this space is this isn't just in the United States. This isn't just in New York. This is global. This is all over the world. So the possibilities of that are just unsurmountable. It's hard to fathom that reaching that many people, right? So I applaud your enthusiasm in that regard for sure. And I guess where I was going with all this was it's not always about the money. It's about so much more than that. And that's to me, that's what this space is all about. It's about so much more than the money, whether it's NFTs, whether it's DeFi, whether it's, you know, decentralized projects that can bring people's voice to the forefront without having censorship and all those things. I just think that this movement is for the people, and that's why I enjoy it so much. So a question to you, sir, would be, at what point in your life early on did you realize that you had a talent for art? And was it always, like you said, you've done digital art for 30 years, but how much handwork have you done? Do you illustrate, or are you abstract painting? What kind of traditional artwork did you do?
Well, just to go back to the last thing for 1 second, you also have to kiss some digital ass to get onto the bigger platforms. And look, I subscribe to what Malcolm X said, any means necessary. And when it comes to making my art and expressing myself, I do it. I'm not proud. And the thing is, I'm flexible and I understand compromise. And I understand that it's an entitled position to be able to, you know, mint my work on Super Rare and Foundation and Nifty Gateway. Is you have to jump through hoops, and I accept that, and that's fine. But I have a very unconventional background because you always hear these stories about how like kids were taken to museums and to art, see art when they were young by their family. And I did not know art galleries existed until I was nearly 27. I was so, like, I call myself an idiot savant, but I was under the impression that art, I went to museums when I was in college, I studied philosophy, and I assumed that an artist made art and it went to a museum, and that was the end of the discussion. And it wasn't until 1988 when Warhol died and his estate was sold at Sotheby's, and I was between jobs, killing time, procrastinating, I call it. And I stumbled into Sotheby's, and I was expecting a bunch of Warhols, which I was at that time not a great fan of. I didn't really fully understand it. But it was his collection of art, a lot of which I had seen in the East Wing of the National Gallery in Washington, D.C. in college. And it just, I was flabbergasted. I could not believe that you could not only like buy, you could buy art and have it in your house, which was, I was not even aware that such a phenomenon could exist. So, I mean, I always wanted to do something creative with some entrepreneurial twist to it. And at that point, I thought the only thing I could conjure, even though I suck at it, is like fashion. I wear the same old polyester vintage Adidas pants every day of my life. I've got about 40, which were not easy to come by. And I don't really care. And I'm lucky enough to be in a position where I don't have to. But I thought I would do something fashion design wise. And once I found that art existed as an actual thing to do, to participate in, I immediately like went to a gallery and saw an exhibition and went to a bank and said, I'd like to borrow 10 grand to buy some art. They looked at me like I was, they were about to call the police basically. But I studied philosophy, and rather than just cast around and do some shit ass job that I would regret for the rest of my life, I decided to hide out in graduate school. I went to law school with zero intent to be a lawyer, but I knew I could only define what I wanted to do for the first like 7 years of my professional existence by the negative. I just knew I didn't want to have a routine. I didn't want to do the same thing every day. I wasn't going to live my life. I hate vacations. The worst thing for me would be a Sunday or to be like marooned on a beach somewhere in the Caribbean. I couldn't think of anything worse. I love to sit in front of a computer. During lockdown, I racked up in one day 16 hours and 7 minutes of screen time on my phone, a personal best, something of which I'm very proud of. And once I found out that you could make stuff and behave, I had a shitty childhood and I'm not complaining. I lost my mom when I was very young. I stuttered, I couldn't talk, and that's why I never shut up now. But I used to rip out pages from magazines and pin them on my wall. So in effect, I have not changed. Like the reason for my life has not changed one iota since I was this catatonic child locked up in my room because I had no social life and friends. And, you know, through college, I began to assimilate and socialize. And like I said, I refused to settle with some job and some career. I wanted to find something I would do for free. through pure passion and love of what I do. And so I started, because I went to grad school, I'd never taken an art class in my life. I conned my way into a teaching position at the New School in 92. And I was hired on probation to teach art only due to the fact I had a graduate degree in law and curated 6 shows. And from there, the dean that hired me on probation left. I've been teaching at everywhere from Rhode Island School of Design, Yale School of Visual Arts. And I basically write and teach for one selfish reason, which is to learn. I love to learn, and then I love to share. So I did a lecture for School of Visual Arts that you could find on YouTube. And I painstakingly, like, I made a presentation that you could see on the video, and all of my research, everything I had ever learned to that point is there. Open architecture. So anyway, for me, NFT, I've learned another, at my age, which is in the, let's say, very late 50s, the fact that I could teach kids half my age less about something which they should be teaching me about is thrilling. And I just, like, every day, NFTs have turned my life upside down. And it was pretty crazy to begin with. And it's just the coolest thing. It's shocking that I never imagined something like this would ever happen to me, that would just be so transformative at this stage in my life and give me such, like, energy. It's amazing.
It's such a revolutionary technology that, you know, when you start looking at the abilities that it has, even outside of the art world and other use cases and stuff, you start looking at tokenizing things for identity or vehicle titles and stuff like that. It really shows you how early we are in this too, right? So it's already changing lives in the art world. It's already changing lives in some other aspects, and it's just beginning to take hold. It's a fundamental piece of architecture, you know, or data structure that we've been missing. You know, it's a way of verifying both ownership and date of creation and a number of other things in a totally verifiable way that we couldn't do with digital files before. So it opens up a lot of other opportunities outside of art. And, you know, earlier, kind of going off topic here, but earlier you mentioned something that I kind of want to touch on. You said pre-Beeple, right? Like, that's really, like, an important thing kind of in the NFT space. Mitch was talking about how it's not always about the money. And that's really, that was like Bitcoin's 20K, right? Beeple selling for 69 million was like Bitcoin's 20,000 peak, when the rest of the world got into it. All of a sudden, that was when everybody really started to look closer. And then all the people sort of flooded in. And that was when it started getting really hard to get accepted into platforms. And, you know, all the traffic went up, gas prices went up, network activity skyrocketed. And it's interesting to see kind of how it's going to change the world going forward as we move past this financial boom and we start getting, you know, past the quote unquote bear market of the NFT space and getting into that 3 to 4 years of busting your ass and working because there's not millions and millions and millions of dollars flying around willy-nilly anymore for a couple of years. So we'll see what it looks like, but I'm excited for it.
I mean, it's funny because like, art got me into this, plain and simple. Like I said, I was a cynical observer of Bitcoin. And the funny thing is that, like, there's $2 trillion of Bitcoin values in the world right now, give or take 100 million or 500 million. But there was never anything to spend crypto on. And NFTs, like, really was all this pent up demand. Imagine you're personally worth $500 million and there's nothing to buy. And then they open a department store next door and they give you, like, a green light to go and spend some of your dough. And I wrote recently that, like, video killed the radio star and NFTs killed the NFT star, because the market shot up, the ETH market, so much, because finally there was a practical way to, you know, flex with your cryptos and spend it. And as a result, like, I mean, I kind of like the fact that NFTs can't compete with the speculative upside of the underlying currency. Mm-hmm. So everyone thinks about fine art, like, let's talk about paintings and sculpture, and everyone just is so stupid to, like, narrowly reduce the dialogue to money, money, money. Art is expensive. You can't, art is not expensive. You can go on Instagram, which before NFTs, Instagram was the democratic wrecking ball that just smashed the hierarchies that had been, you know, 100 years in the making in the fine art world. And Instagram, like, breaking down these geographical barriers that you could be making art in any continent in the universe and have it seen, and through hustle, like everything else, develop an audience for it. And you could buy great art today for $500. And you could buy, the average price of NFTs are $100. So again, like, I mean, I've literally gotten into near fisticuffs with people arguing that NFTs are a currency. Art makes a shitty currency unless you're screwing your nose against a Bloomberg screen all day long, tracking the prices of Andy Warhol, which is a pretty pitiful fucking thing to do.
Yeah, don't do that.
If you want to make money, trade commodities. If you want to love art and find new horizons, new audiences, and new frontiers for the making, the distributing, then just follow your heart for art. And I mean, I don't animate my videos. I couldn't, like, what, I love old cars. Once the key turns and the engine starts, I black out. I don't understand the functionality of a combustion engine. But like, I know I love art and I study philosophy. So I think in ideas, and then like, I don't care how I effectuate it and implement it and fabricate it, but I get it done. Technology, I've had an IBM desktop when I was in law school and taught myself how to use it, just because it was so clear to me that this was going to be the, you know, digital X and O's on the wall. This was the future. NFTs, I'm so grateful that I've been involved for nearly a year, which is a short time, but tech time is like dog time. A year in digital land is 7 years of meat space, real life. And I'm just so glad that I've given 5 lectures. I have a mentor who works at Google, who's an engineer and a coder. I just love to learn. And every day I'm taking notes and learning and learning and trying to, like, you know, make it applicable to my life and many other people. I mean, I've had feedback from literally, you know, dozens of people that I've helped to shepherd through the process of jumping in. So in that case, it's a gift that I love to receive and I love to give.
That's so cool. It's amazing to, you know, hear the different perspectives on what your thought process is. And so I want to ask you this question. If you could go back in time, in your timeline, and change anything, is there anything, without getting too deep, obviously, is there anything that you would go back in your timeline and change?
Shouldn't have asked me that, bro.
hold on. I'm going to go get a beer.
Here we go. Wait a second. All right. Yeah,
me too. That actually has to do with my answer.
Sweet. All right.
Nice.
You ready?
Yep.
I would have been sober for longer. Life is so short and there's so much to know. There's so much to do. And 2 years ago, I quit drugging and drinking. And I wasn't like a textbook alcoholic. I was teaching, lecturing all over the world, publishing 2-3 articles a month. But I was getting fucked up on quite a regular basis. And that just doesn't help. You know, I just, since I never really understood that sobriety as a life choice was even a distinct possibility. In the art world where I was covering art fairs and auctions, and I was going out a lot of the time when I was on my beat writing articles and doing my work. And there's just this myth, a romantic myth that, you know, getting wasted is fuels inspiration. And I'm so fired up about all the things to accomplish in my life. And I just wish I was a little bit more, I had all cylinders now that we started with cars. If I had all the cylinders popping to the degree that right now I get more done, like the more I overcommit, if I'm free for 3 hours, I'm paralyzed. But if I've overcommitted on 20 deadlines, I get it all done. And it just, I get this level of energy and enthusiasm that powers me like nuclear energy. It's just, it's infectious. And that's, for me, is like, besides implementing my own thoughts and ideas and artworks, teaching, and I was just came back from Vienna where I did a show, from Cologne where I did an NFT show, one of the first in like a really kind of old school, hardcore conceptual art gallery, one of Europe's finest. And the guy was like criticized for being an old white guy who was reticent about technology. And then when I was having dinner in his house during my curatorial project, he said, the only reason you're here is because I was accused of hating technology. So they called me like everyone else. How do I get on NFT Gateway? How do I do an NFT? Like everyone just, instead of just learning the hard way, they just want a shortcut. But this gallery called me looking for shortcut. And I said, bring me in. And they did. And I just love it. You know, I'll never stop.
So what was the turning point then, Kenny? What was the turning point that said, I'm not going to continue on this path and I want to change? Do you remember that moment?
You keep probing me and you just don't want to know where this is going to go.
All right. Well, we can change the subject.
No, but it's worth saying. Look, I love what I do and I'm blessed, but I've had a lot of difficulties. I have kids. One of my kids had a few drug issues. And as a result, I stopped drinking just to be a better role model. Like I said, I wasn't waking up and boozing. I would smoke a bit of weed. But like anything that becomes habitual is not good other than work and family. And then I lost the kid 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was a really tragic. He took his life and he was thriving and super successful, got into graduate school without any. Anyway, like I realized I had to set an example and I had a moral obligation to talk about these issues, whether it's to you, to a class of young kids. And besides helping people get through the bullshit of the art world and realize there's another way, the way of the truth, like that eggs me on and fuels me. And then when I've suffered this, I realize that I have to have something good transpire from something so tragic. So I've incorporated this discussion that I'm having with you in my lectures for universities. And I've had feedback from people that have been in a similar situation and have not gone through with what they thought they might, because people don't talk. People don't talk about mental health crises.
Right.
People don't talk about the machinations of the art world. And like half my life, 3/4 of my life is fighting the status quo of the conservative CUNTSs in the art world. I mean, what I love about NFTs are that they piss people off so much.
Yes, and they do. Not
the fucking environmental consumption and all that. It's just that people are scared of what's new. Yeah. They don't want to adapt. They're nervous. It's like a turf thing and a zero-sum game. Like people are frightened by something that's uncomfortable and that they don't fully understand. So instead of just doing what someone like we've done, I mean, I'm just meeting you guys, but like you want to just say, wow, let me just try to understand what this is. Like crypto, I knew what it was, but it didn't interest me because I'm not a money person.
Right.
I'm an art person. As soon as crypto had an application to fine art, I was like, I am so deep in, you're going to have to hold me back because I'm all in. Because it has to do with my life and how I can make my life and other people's lives better. And that people don't understand that. It's not a grift. It's not a con. It's not a ploy. It's just a way for people that make art to be able to circulate it and express them.
What? I'm glad I asked the question, and I asked the question because I know there's people listening and I know people listen to things, and it's always helpful for someone to hear, you know, how someone actually got out of it, how somebody actually changed the direction and why. Right. So if for nothing else, to dig a little deep into you, but also, you know, kind of offer somebody some reconciliation that there is a future. Right.
But I have to say, like, my life is intoxicating right now.
That's awesome.
I mean, I'm cynically idealistic. Every day I wake up, I'm hopeful that I'm going to get a call, get a gig, get an interview, get an opportunity.
Yeah.
And it happens. Every day it's happening now.
That's
every
great.
Day, another interview, another lecture. And it's just like a blessing. You go through shit. There's nothing you could do. You try your best, but you can always try a little harder and a little more. And this is something that could be beneficial to people. It's not, you know, an evil monster that's gonna, like, there's some trick up someone's sleeve.
Exactly.
We're not manipulating to being, like, you know, cheerleaders for crypto and their tools. That's just ridiculous. I couldn't care less.
It's just a continuation of open source. And I think that's one of the big things about this space, is so much open source things are happening and people can't wrap their head around it. Wait, people are just developing stuff for free? People are just developing stuff for others to see and others to use. That doesn't make any sense, because it goes against human. It goes against the last 60 years or more, right?
Wait till ETH is the environmental concerns are resolved. Then people are really going to get bitter.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
No shit. Let's talk about that for a bit. I mean, I think, to me, the people crying about ETH environmental concerns are the same It's the same level as the I can take a screenshot people. And I know that it's like a legitimate concern. Like, I'm not saying I don't care about the environment. I'm like, fuck it and all that. But at the same time, what do you think your turpentine is doing? And like, how does your canvas get to you? And like all the paints that you're buying at the store. Like, let's talk about that.
What about casting a 30-foot bronze sculpture? Do you know that when paintings are shipped, they make a wooden crate with the same yes. amount of wood for it, and it has a single use. It's thrown yep. away afterward, right in the garbage.
Yes.
Did anyone? The thing is that because crypto is so relatively transparent in terms of the numerical, like, you know, counting of everything,
yep.
you could see the usage. You don't. Nobody measures how many assholes get on a plane to go to an art fair, and then they can see all the art in their own front yard, but they don't go to the galleries in their own neighborhood, but they'll go to right. to see them.
Yeah, what exactly.
That? What about the future? Yeah.
What about YouTube? How many, you know, think about how many tons of CO2 people put out just watching YouTube a year, you know?
Right.
Can't even imagine, you know, it's probably pretty comparable. So it's like...
Guilty is charged.
Yeah, same here. You know,
we look at the right? look at and the carbon.
We're doing it right the carbon now with Zoom. Like, it's just it's an evolution yeah. thing, right? We're still early in the even just computers in general. Like, where were we with computers 20 years ago, right? We didn't have shit.
You have a room of great research supercomputers that would do what a phone does now, taking up an enormous warehouse. But I mean, look at people. You know, like you said, we're in the baby nascent stages of something that is going to transform every aspect of human relationships and human interaction. 100%. And it's going to get better and better and better. And there'll still be moaners that'll find a new thing to complain about.
Always. I mean, how many people still complain about the internet? So, I mean, whatever.
And also, like, another misnomer is that technology alienates people from one another. I have met more, if it wasn't for Instagram, sad to say or happy to say, I have, like, that's my only community. And I've met hundreds of people from online in real life and maintain growing, healthy, relatively normal relationships with some abnormal, but that's fun too. But like, you know, this is such a stupid way for people to dismiss something that they don't like for whatever reason. It's not true.
Well, it's funny how many people throw that fit and then 2 weeks later have been invited to some platform and there's $500,000 hanging in front of their face and suddenly yeah. they don't care anymore.
And every gallery will be minting NFTs in a year. Yeah. Every gallery, everyone that complains, moans, groans, will all have them, will all be doing them. Artists want a voice. Artists use anything at hand in order to make something. And this is fantastic revolution. So you'd be a fool to let it go by.
Another tool.
The rabbit holes we could go down. Oh my goodness. We could go down the energy rabbit hole for probably another 35 minutes.
What about the Kitty Schachter toilet paper rabbit hole?
Yes. Tell us about
that. I like to talk about minting my grandmother was a good one when you took. I mean, I made toilet paper just as a joke. And then all of a sudden during the initial lockdown last March, I didn't even remember that I made it. I made it in China and then I had crates of toilet paper that of course nobody wanted. It had my visage on it. I replicate the emoji with the hands upturned because I'm always apologizing for my actions. And then I ended up trading toilet paper for paper towels and other things. It was like a currency during the lockdown.
It's like its own crypto, but it's exactly. the opposite.
Hey, you know, it's funny you say that. You're trading toilet paper. It was like a currency. But you know what? Anything that has a use, anything that has a value, I mean, anything that has a use and that is a necessity has value. Anything. I mean, and it's just a matter of how bad do you need it at that time will generate how much value that thing's going to hold.
Art, I mean, a lot of people would say art is subjective, art is superfluous. But for me, art is a necessity. And they've even done clinical studies that show commissioning art for hospital rooms and in public spaces in hospitals
yes.
has a discernible ameliorative effect where patients require less meds over shorter hospital stays. Like yeah. having a Labrador retriever. Looking at art reduces anxiety and blood pressure. And whether you're looking on a screen, on a TV, on some kind of, you know, dedicated display on your desk, whatever it
doesn't matter.
Just looking on your phone at your art, it calms you down yeah. and it makes your life more livable every.
Your optics release all those endorphins and helps you chill. I get it. I know this. It's no different than music, really. You know, music kind of does the same thing for people. It's just that's they're hearing it versus seeing it. You know, the senses, our senses, the sense of smell. If you think about it, if you burn incense, right, it helps you calm down depending on the smell of the incense that you're burning. So all these things, the taste, right, our taste buds with food and the different cuisines that we can enhance and taste, and you know, even wine, right? Well, people don't drink wine, they taste it, right? The wine tasting, and it's through your smell and your palate. So the senses are wide open, and those are what actually control our bodies, and people don't really realize that. And when you can calm those senses down, looking at something that's pleasing to the eye, you know, and just brings you peace. So no, I can totally relate to that. And did that have anything to do with the charity piece that you did with Jerry Saltz?
Well, I mean, Jerry started out as an NFT hater, and he kind of was seduced by the money, because as a writer, you don't get remuneration really for your efforts. And I think initially his idea was to do something which was a hybrid charity / profit venture. And then he asked me to just help him. I was like the midwife pulling the baby out by the head. And he decided to do this piece. But when he released the concept, he was immediately shot down. I mean, he had a whole host of digital trolls because everyone was hating against him because he came out against NFTs and crypto in the beginning, but he came around. And it immediately, the pushback revolved around the fact that his 10,000 Instagram posts were largely comprised of the art of the people. So there was a backlash. So from there, he decided to make it, he would give his share to charity, all of it. And I didn't even know that he was going to announce me. I thought I was going to be on the down low as someone who just helped facilitate it. But then he publicly included me, and I had the option to keep all my money. I would have made 75 grand or whatever. But I decided to give away all my money for charity in the name of my kid. So, you know, I think, look, he opened up a lot of dialogue. There was a lot of, you know, bad feelings towards him. I didn't want to get dragged into it because I've been a crazy ass proponent of these things since the beginning. And I've written 5 very favorable, objective, critical, but affirmative articles in favor of NFTs. I talk about I'm not a stupid, you know, like I'm not running for office for NFT president. When I gave the lecture, half my lecture was about what's wrong with NFTs. And the other half was about why what's good far outweighs what's bad. But I have open eyes, and I just think Jerry's thing went a long way towards just increasing the audience of people that were taking a serious look at this, even though, like, it's not going to change the people that are just steadfast, dead set against it. But that's what you're always going to find, people like that. I mean, I curate shows, I make art, I buy and sell art, and people just use it as a way to write me off and say I'm a dilettante. A dilettante used to be a good thing, where you did a lot of different things as best to your abilities. And none of these people will ever stop me from what I want to do. As long as I don't hurt anyone, no one will stop me. And the more resistance and the more threats against me just fires me up even more. I mean, I just think it's great. It's so much fun to like engage like
this. That's just the New Yorker in you, come on.
Yeah, you're right.
That's all it is.
No, but I just think like back to being, this is like therapy, but when I was little, I only ever got attention if I did something wrong. So it was ingrained in me. The only way anyone is ever going to pay attention to me is if I annoy people. So annoyance the world over. But the thing is, I think that anyone would know from reading me or spending 5 seconds is that I care, and I care deeply about what I do and my art and my teaching, and that's my world. That's my life. That's my God, really. And I will do anything to defend it. And I just do it not for any finance. I've never really done anything stupidly for money in my entire. In fact, most of what I do professionally is sabotaging my economic well-being. I mean, I do things for because I love to, for my passion.
Right.
Not ever just looking to say like, oh, I'm going to mint some NFTs and make some money. I want more. Don't do that. I don't do that. I buy the art. Some of my favorite artists have died destitute. They were too far ahead of the time, which is worse than being behind the time. And that's true because people don't trust their own intuitive, instinctual relationship to things. They don't trust themselves. They just trust when everyone else jump on the bandwagon, you know, yep. And that's again.
Yeah, that's absolutely it. All right, let's go. Last question of the night. Let's go way back in time. Most people have some sort of a project or, you know, in this case, probably art project or something where they've, you know, they didn't quite turn out the way they wanted it to, but ultimately it's taught you the most of any project you've ever worked on. Do you have anything like that? Anything that stands out from your history?
I mean, you have some pretty probing, interesting questions. I can say that. You know, my whole life is just a series of setbacks and advances. And it's the first time in pretty much my entire life that I'm getting comfortable in my own skin and accepting who I am. And, you know, I have no regrets except for what I mentioned to you, but everything has been a learning curve, and every misstep, every fuck up, every setback, every time I lost money doing this, I lost a fortune doing that, but it's all experience. I get to use it in my art, in my writing, in my teaching. And I'm just really the thing I'm grateful for is just that I have an audience of more than one, or one, even an animal stuck in a room listening to me would do it for me. But I'm just really, I mean, I'm so lucky that anybody even gives a rat's ass to hear one like you guys calling me up and talking like this. And we're having this discussion. I never had discussions like this when I was up until I was in my early teens. And, you know, everything has gone just fine. I never thought I would be here. I've always related to computers, not from a technical standpoint, but they just look to me as like what they are, a tool of the future that brings the future into the present. And I want to just, you know, you talk about artificial intelligence. There's no such thing as artificial intelligence. It's people that program parameters into a computer and extend the reach of the brain and what we're capable of doing. No one knows the full extent of a brain that we could actually use, nor computers. And I'm just on a wild ride of experimentation and challenging myself. And it's one long project that I'm involved in, and I have no regrets about that. Professionally, I'm just where I want to be today. It'd be better to have more money to pay down payment on my house a little better, but fuck it.
It'll come. Patience, right? We got time. We got time. Kenny,
wait, one last thing. That's a fantastic thing you just said. Art is a slow burning process. There's no quick fix. Sure, there are some kids that make trillions when they're babies in their diapers, but that doesn't matter. Art and life is slow, incremental, organic.
That's right. Increase
the breadth of your life, your experience, and your knowledge, and that's it.
And every step leads to the next.
Yes. Thank you so much for listening to me, and I'm sorry that I...
No, don't apologize. No, this was amazing.
Excellent episode.
This was really good. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, Kenny. It was appreciated.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to do another one of these at some point in the future to check in and see how things are going.
Hell yeah.
Questions. I'm going to be thinking about those tires for the next...
Hell yeah. In the meantime, I'm going to go buy some gummy bears.
I'm going to make right on. Some gummy bear tires. See you later.
Take it easy.
All right, brother. Take it easy.
Peace.
Oh, that was fun.
That was fun. And yeah. I'm not kidding. I'm definitely going to go scrounge up somewhere. I've got something in this house that's gummy something. I don't know. Gummy octopus, gummy owls. I've got some shit somewhere.
I got some deep fried fish in there that I get to go eat after I get out of here.
I've got a sweet onion chicken teriyaki sub waiting for me.
Oh, Subway?
Smells pretty tasty. Yes, I love Subway.
Yeah. Did you run into, what's his name?
Jared? Yeah. Fuck that guy. I've heard that he's kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. But I'll tell you what, I was ready to go off on the whole energy thing, and we're going to save that conversation for another time.
Oh, yeah. This could have been like we got to get him on for a live stream and do just like a fucking 2-hour weekend sit right down.
His energy, and he could just go. I love it. That was great.
Totally.
Not a dull moment in this podcast whatsoever. You know, guys, we hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. That was so much fun. And, you know, stay tuned. If you don't follow us on YouTube, go to YouTube, sign up, follow us, subscribe, hit those like buttons, check out our videos from our latest live releases, and then stay tuned for all of the upcoming releases we have coming out. So until next time, guys, you have yourselves a great day.
Take it easy. Peace.